Welcome to HR Leaders Live. We're live here on LinkedIn, and the topic of today's discussion is the future of work. And I thought, what would be better to have some of my best friends to come in to join me on. So thank you so much for joining us, guys. Today we're going to be talking about what does the future workplace look like? What are the challenges and the opportunities that are presented to us at our organizations? What are the impact of AI, machine learning, VR on the future worker? And also, how will technology change the workplace and where work gets done? So joining me today, I'm joined by Dave Rorick, speaker, author, professor, and HR thought partner and friend. Dave, I'm just going to tell everyone we're friends from now on. And also Pat Wardors, chief talent officer and CHRO at ServiceNow. And last but definitely not least, Christina Morton, vice president of HR for Europe and Australia at General Mills and Yoplait. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you all?
Very good.
Terrific.
Nice. Fantastic. My heart can beat a little bit slower now we're live because I was having a slight anxiety attack, guys, before we came live on here. So I'm hoping everyone can hear me. First and foremost, if you're listening in right now, drop a comment below. Let us know where you're listening in from. And if you have any questions, I'll do my best throughout the show to answer those, guys, and have them over. So kind of let's jump in, guys. When I messaged you and said, guys, we're going live on LinkedIn. Here's a topic I want to discuss, right? The future of work. What was the first thing that come to mind? Because I'm sure this is a question you guys get, you think about and you get asked. And Dave, I'm sure so many people ask you this question all the time. So when you think about what the future of work, what does that mean to you? What thoughts come to mind? We'll start with yourself, Pat.
So we were chatting earlier before we went live about the future of work a bit from an employee experience. And so for me, it's about the intentionality of using the technology, the point of view, the systems thinking from a customer experience, redesign the employee experience, and being very clear, it's about the employee value proposition. It's about, and the culture and the values you want to portray in the company. It's the systems and technology that manifest that culture and allow you to do your great work and realize your potential. And then the third leg is the physical and digital space in which you work. So right now we're leveraging digital to get stuff done. So this is a great example of the future of work.
Fantastic. Yourself, Christina?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the first thing, of course, I thought of, Chris, was, oh, I'm going to learn something through this conversation. I want to be there. And so, honestly, that's primarily why I'm here. And, you know, when I think about the future of work, I wish I knew where this quote came from, but I once heard that things are going to change less than you think they will in 10 years and more than you think they will in 3 years. And I think that's true. I think it's still important we project out what could things look like in 10 years, because maybe some of that will happen in three, but maybe in 10 it won't be quite so radical as we think. At the same time, I think the proliferation of technology and the lowering of barriers and access to technology and information is completely changing our workplace. And the idea that as HR practitioners, we can finally start to really bring some consistency to our values and our day-to-day life of the employees to improve that in a positive way, that's incredibly exciting to me. Because at least as I walk around, there's still a lot of work that is manual, is transactional, is a pain in the neck. I think of expense reporting, things like this, where it's like, man, there's got to be a better way. This is not adding value to our business or selling cases or making our consumers happy.
Fantastic. Over to you, Dave.
I think what I should simply say is amen, amen to both comments. if I can make a simple point, and I'm going to now demonstrate that I have bad French. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. That some of the future of work is the same as today. And I think Christina said that nicely, that work has to get done. And the thing that's the same is that I think work means we have to add value. We've got to deliver value to someone else. It's not what you do, Chris, that's so wonderful. It's how your shows and your messages help other people what they do better. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, how do we add value differently in the future? And I think Pat's comments were just terrific. We add value not just because we have great employees, but we have great work environments. It's not only the individual, it's the team. And so I think we're going to see more of that future of work building around creating value in unique ways.
Yeah, fantastic. I think I was saying to Christina before the show, as well, I've had thousands of conversations around this topic. And I really find it difficult to define what the future work. And someone says, Chris, what do you think the future work's going to look like? I'm like, oh God, we can probably have a 2-hour conversation about this. But I recently saw an article on Deloitte Insights. I love going Deloitte Insights. It's a great source of resources for me. And I saw them post an article recently, and they defined the future work in 3 areas, and it really helped me. So the first was the work itself, so the what. Secondly, it was the workforce, so the who. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, the workplace, where work takes place. Yep. And just defining in those 3 areas just really helped me. And whenever I'm thinking about building new workshops or podcasts or the future of work, I use that as my sort of go-to guide. And they have an incredible, I'll link it in the description for you guys as well after. So when they talk about the workforce itself, they talk about who can do the work, with new talent platforms and contracts, who can do the work? How do we leverage talent from full-time to managed services to freelancers to gig workers to crowds? That opens up such a huge change. And that's sort of the talent piece, right? The talent category. And then they talk about the work itself, the work category. So what work can be automated? And that's something we hear about now, AI, robotics, or cognitive. And what work can be done by and with smart machines? And that's sort of the automation level of that side. And then the third part of sort of the triangle is the workplace, which is kind of the area that I'm really excited about. Where is the work done? And I've seen this change hugely over the last few years, with new combinations of collaborative teaming, digital reality technologies, how our workplaces and work practices reshaping where and when the work is done. So that's the sort of triangle I try and operate from: the talent category, the automation level, and then the physical location of where work happens. Mm-hmm. And I'll link that in the description for everyone if you want to read that article. It's fantastic, and it's really helped me to sort of narrow it down and design my workshops and our content around those areas, around the future of work as well. So that's what I would add to the conversation.
That's great.
So in your minds, the future work's already massively changed, as you guys have already alluded to. If I look at when I started this job at 17 years old, to what HR was, and what the workplace really was, to where we are now, it's almost it's crazy, actually. If you told me we'd be where we are right now, and I'll be on LinkedIn Live talking to you guys, sharing content, even that as an example, no one would believe it, right? As well. So I suppose it's a question for Wendy and Christina, as leaders in an organization, shaping the future of work for your own employees, how do you then try and bring in some of these things you're hearing into the workplace? When you talk about AI, digital transformation, how do you then incorporate that into your own HR function?
Do you want me to go first? I'm happy to go. I think for me, it's about looking at that trifecta, Chris, that you were talking about, and saying on the technology side, how do we improve the experience for the employees? Where's the constraint point? Listening to them. I mean, always listening, always on, getting the feedback. Figuring out how technology can serve them, free them up so they can realize not just productivity, but potential, so they can make decisions about how best to use their time, either personally or professionally, right? So less frustration at work, better, pride in what you're delivering to the workplace. So technology allows you to have the insights to figure out what problems to solve and to let go of the friction that we find every day. And what's I find very enlightening is when John Donahoe, the CEO of ServiceNow, talks about the consumerization of the enterprise, light bulbs go off. It's like, I want the Amazon at work. Like, I want to click my approvals for my expense report. I want to be able to do my travel seamlessly and then do my expenses through a photo and like submit. Like, I can't tell you how many expense receipts I've lost and go, oh, well, got to eat it. Like, it's not it's not good.
I had a CHRO on a podcast recently, and I said, are you okay? Because he's really frustrated just before we went live. And I was like, how are you? Like, you seem really annoyed. He's like, Chris, I was just thinking, I just needed to buy some stationery for my desk because he just started his job. And he's like, and the fact that I have to wait 3 or 4 weeks to buy my stationery and it to go through procurement, when I could literally walk downstairs, walk across the road, buy what I needed to buy, walk back in, and actually have it, or I could go on Amazon Prime and it be delivered to me in the next 2 hours. But inside my own workplace, I'm not going to mention who worked which company. It was a very innovative company as well, which makes matters worse in most cases. And he was really frustrated by it. I was like, that's your first day in the office and this is your experience. Yeah. And it just kind of made me laugh. And he's like, it comes to your point though, right? We're so far ahead outside of the workplace, but inside the workplace, in many cases, we're light years behind as well. So
one of the things we've sort of discovered, and it's so helpful to hear Pat and Christina talk, is that I think technology has gone through four phases. I think phase one was efficiency. Take a picture of my expenses and submit it. And we get that. Phase two is innovation. There are so many incredible apps coming out. I get calls for apps every day. The funnest one recently was, Dave, we'll take a picture of your face and we'll tell you your leadership style.
Oh,
and
God.
I said, have you seen my face? I mean, I'll be there before. My sense is that's where 70 to 80% of the focus on digital has happened. I think we got to go to three and four. And that's what's so exciting, Pat, about what you said. Three is information. Give me knowledge and information that lets me do my best. And Christina, you talked about that. And then Pat, where I hope the future of work goes is phase four. So it's not efficiency, innovation, information. For me, I call it connection. That there is a crisis of loneliness. And the research shows people online more often or more isolated. They're more lonely. It's a leading cause of mortality. In Britain, they now have a ministry of loneliness. I think the label that gets put on that sometimes is experience, but it's how do we build connection through the technology that we've got? And my sense is that's the unexplored area right now in the future of work, that when people work at home or when people work in isolation or gig economy, whatever the new metaphor is, how do they still feel connected so that they're not hanging out there on an isolated island? And I don't think yet I've seen a lot of companies master that. And Pat, that's what I think you're trying to do with Service Master is to use technology. Yeah, we got to do efficiency. I get that. We got to be innovative. I get that. We got to manage information flow. I get that. How do we use that to redefine the connection among people?
The funny that you say that. So in talking and dancing with my CIO at ServiceNow, what we've been doing is trying to keep the human in the middle. And I'm a huge believer, as Chris knows, about belonging, right? So creating a sense of belonging in the community in which you work unlocks your superpowers. And how do you do that, right? So creating trust, psychological safety, leveraging technology so I can see your body language versus just a phone versus just email. Creating signals of sentiment in technology to say, are you engaged or not? Like, where's your body language? Are you leaning into a presentation? Are you leaning back? Are you walking, getting your coffee? Exactly, Dave.
I just leaned in.
So there's...
Yeah, what? And I'm sorry to Chris and Christina, but we love to simplify and find kind of major themes. We found three. What are the employees looking for? Believe, purpose-driven, meaning, value at work. Become, grow, learning, growth mindset. And the third is belonging. Yeah. And we've actually posted some stuff that if you simplify this all down, belonging is critical, but belonging is around those other two in that triangle. Yeah. You've also got to have belief, belong to a cause that matters to you. Mm-hmm. And you've got to become, you've got to learn and grow. So, Pat, I really love the word belonging. I posted a piece on that on LinkedIn recently. Yeah. We're all supposed to say LinkedIn is great three times. So that's my first. But,
LinkedIn.
I really like that sense. And for me, that's connection. And that's beyond traditional engagement. Employee experience is not bring a best friend to work. Yeah. It's or bring your dog to work. It's around believe, become, and belong. And how do we enable that through technology? Frankly, I have not seen it really excelled yet. I think that's an open space that we're working on.
But I would say video makes a huge difference, And now, you know, for in the world I work in, most of my team is not in the same office as me. So to a certain extent, the conversation we're having right now, this is what my whole day is like, is having this conversation. I can see your faces. I can see when you lean in. I can see when you put a puzzled look on your face and have a question.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
We can have those conversations. I haven't had my leadership team together in person for over 18 months, but we have deep conversations about emotional intelligence, sharing, in our HR community as well at General Mills. Our mantra is lead, grow, and belong. So I think we're all on the same page from that standpoint. And we need to find ways to be able to do that. I can't have my team member from Australia flying into, Switzerland every 3 months so that we can feel a connection. We have to find other ways to do that. And we have to be vulnerable even on video and even in these conversations. And I think that's just part of life, right? I don't have a lesser relationship with my own parents right now, even though they live 4,000 miles away, right? We have to find the way to make that connection and with my kids as well, with their grandparents. And so we do that, and we do that with video. Yeah.
Beautifully. I love the language.
I have some questions, guys, from the guys on LinkedIn. I know they're screening me like, Chris, put questions in there. Make sure you ask them. So I'm going to get told off if I don't ask you guys. So one of the questions has come up a few times. David also posted it, is how best can we think through task-based disruption?
Oh,
that's a lot.
Can I give a quick comment on that?
Go for it.
I think, and again, it's a post I did on LinkedIn. That's twice for LinkedIn, a pitch. But I think in HR, we've done workforce planning. And the issue is, given the strategy, given the key positions, given the capabilities a company needs, what's the workforce we need? I think we need to evolve to work task planning. Work task planning, even Chris, in your earlier comment, you talked about who's going to do the work in a gig economy. Is it full-time? Is it part-time? Is it contract? Is it insourced? Is it outsourced? That's still around workforce. I would add now another layer, that a lot of the work will be done through technology, through AI, through digital. And so what you do is you decompose a job into tasks. Here's the task we have to do. And then you say, is it full-time work? Is it part-time work? And is it technology? Because technology will replace a lot of the routine work. And so I hope in HR we shift from workforce planning, which is about the people, to work task planning, which is how do we get the task done, including technology as an enabler.
Hey, Pat, I have a question for you on that, because with ServiceNow and using it as a backlog, and thinking about that from how would you say in an agile environment, you would compare the backlog to work task planning? Or is it totally different?
It's slightly different. I think that from a ServiceNow perspective and tasks and workflow, and you put the intelligence layer on it, like machine learning or AI on top of it, the intelligence changes the task over time, right? So you bring in knowledge into the equation, and all of a sudden the system is auto-populating stuff that you've been manually inputting. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden it's anticipating, patterns, and it's simplifying what gets served up and getting to an end result faster, better. Mm-hmm. So technology is evolving, anticipating need. I think that it's easier for the gig economy to plug and play into what I call an interface into systems. And I think we're getting smarter on those interfaces, mm-hmm. in terms of data privacy and the rights of, roles and creating discrete roles. And so through technology, you are actually allowing more people to play within your what you call your firewall, so to speak, and then to plug in more easily because the system is anticipating and understanding the type of workforce this is and how to smooth out the process. So I think technology is enabling us to do some things pretty cool.
Yeah. And have you guys had to do a lot of thinking in terms of rethinking your talent models that exist due to this new, for example, in the article I was referring to, one of the things that I was really shocked about is I was talking about how 35% of the US workforce is supplemental and temporary and project-based and contract work. And the statistic also they said is freelance work is now growing faster than the total workforce, as it was 8.1% compared to 2.6% of all employees. And I found that quite shocking, to be honest. And it was like, wow, it's growing so fast. The fact that freelance is growing faster than actual workforce itself is going to be a big shift. So are you guys keeping that? Have you had to rethink that?
What worries me is when we have these people, independent contractors, on islands that are not connected to each other. That's where the belonging and connection becomes so difficult. That working at home is a wonderful way to learn, to become better in autonomy. But there's also a value in connection, that something happens when you connect, when you belong, and that the isolating experience may actually get in the way.
I really struggled as well when I first started this company. For my whole career, I'd been around a huge team. So I managed a team of 20 to 30 sales execs. So I was always around people. And when I started a company from my bedroom, in my spare room, I started this company. The thing that I struggled the most with wasn't that.
We have to be careful about Chris starting a company in his bedroom. That should
That's
not
what I
be.
That's not garage. I was interested, but
do not go there.
Well, I live in an apartment, so there wasn't a garage. So I was forced to do that, and now I've officially been kicked out of the bedroom, and now it's the baby room. So I didn't have a choice in the matter either way. But the thing I really struggled with was not the actual building of the company, but the energy. So I used to gather so much energy from the people around me, and that was really what it inspired me to push hard. And especially in sales, it's really hard to be in sales and be on your own without sort of, you know, leveraging off other people's energy and their passion. And so I said to Shane early on, like, we need to as soon as possible, one, we need to work together more often, and two, every time we communicate, it was through video or face to face, because I told him very early on, I'm really struggling with this as well. And to think how you guys have to deal with that on scale, I can only imagine.
So Christina, how do you in Switzerland stay connected to the people in Minneapolis? How do you make that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's video, right? It's a little bit planning and organizing. So, you know, I organize usually my day so that on the earlier part of the day, I'm doing my Australia and Europe stuff. And typically the last 2 hours of my work day, I can connect with our teams in Minneapolis. IM is great. And Skype video is, you know, we rely on it heavily. And we've upgraded the technology in most of our buildings and our systems to be able to connect via video. Every one-on-one, every meeting that I do with Minneapolis, we use video. So.
That's nice.
And I do that with my team in Europe too. So it enriches the experience and the conversation. It also keeps you more engaged, right? You don't get distracted and start doing your email. doing other stuff.
Or we will see you doing it.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Hey Chris, I want to go back real quick to your one point about the gig economy from others. I think what you see more and more is the cottage industry of the WeWork, of the workspaces that have a combination of employers or independent contractors partnering together that are coming for community, to the sense of belonging, but actually have disparate roles, right? They don't actually work together. They you know, rent a conference room. They come in and they do their gig and they get their cup of coffee and they get their work done. And I think technology through video that Christina was talking about and through chat and Slack and collaboration tools, you change how that happens. And so I think both the physical and the technology is evolving to create more flexibility and choice.
Fantastic. Well, guys, I know we could talk about this forever, but I have to wrap up. And thank you for everyone for listening. Thank you guys for joining us. It's our first ever LinkedIn Live, and I couldn't think of better people to spend the time with. So I really appreciate you guys coming on. This definitely won't be the last one from us guys. And this is going to be a weekly show. So if you enjoyed today's content, please, if you have not already followed me on LinkedIn, make sure you follow me there. And also follow Dave, Christina, and Pat. You guys, I'm warning you now, you're probably going to get a lot of messages from everyone after, so don't blame me for that. Well, Dave, you're posting every Tuesday, right?
I am on LinkedIn. Every Tuesday.
Make sure you look out, follow Dave on there so you can be notified. Apart from that, I wish you all the best. Have a great weekend, everyone. And I'll see you all next week. See you later, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.